And thank you, Nathan. It is Maryland Morning. This morning, we continue our conversations with candidates for mayor of Baltimore. I'm Tom Hall. Republican Alan Walden joins me in the studio. He will be one of three candidates on the ballot in November, along with Democratic nominee Senator Catherine Pugh and Green Party candidate Joshua Harris. Alan Walden was a morning anchor and commentator at WBAL Radio for 16 years. For 15 years before that, he was chief radio correspondent for NBC News Worldwide. He is 80 years old. He lives in Baltimore's Cross Keys with his wife, Jeannie. They are the parents of two grown children, a Brooklyn native. He is, he says, a Baltimorean by choice, having lived in the city since 1988. Alan Walden, it is terrific to see you. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, and it's good to see you again since the last time we got together doing something entirely different.
Very different. We were selling auction items for Center Stage or something. Well, as you used to say on WBAL, we have a lot to talk about.
Oh, boy.
So first, let's talk about how you're doing. You look terrific, but this summer you received a very serious diagnosis and you underwent surgery for cancer. But how you feeling?
I feel fine. I recovered from it pretty well. I'm not 100% back to where I should be, but probably 95%+. It was very frightening. The word cancer itself is terribly frightening. And now I join the legions of cancer survivors. I'm fine. I'm clean.
Terrific. Well, I'm one of those as well, and I'm glad to have you join the club. You have been on my side of the mic many hundreds, thousands of times. I wonder, what do you think voters should be asking in this election? How do you think voters should be framing the questions about the city of Baltimore and our future?
Well, I'll frame it the way I have framed it. Do you think that the same people doing the same things in the same way can produce a different outcome? And the answer, I think, is no. And I think that's the question that voters should be asking. What have we gotten? Where are we after decades of one-party rule? There hasn't been a Republican mayor in Baltimore since Theodore Roosevelt McClellan. And I don't think there's been a Republican on the city council since before World War II. It's been that long. That doesn't mean that we are living under the tyranny of a single party. It just means that's the way things have evolved. And I don't think they have evolved well. And I'm assumption being a very dangerous thing to do, but I'm going to assume that a lot of the people who live here, 622,000 people, we once had a population of almost 1 million, but that was a long time ago, that the voters of Baltimore are saying, wait, something is really fundamentally wrong here, and we ought to try something new.
What would be new in an Alan Walden administration that we haven't seen, for example, in a Stephanie Rawlings-Blake administration, or that we might expect to see in a Catherine Pugh administration?
Okay, the first thing is a different identity, a different definition of the city of Baltimore. That's the right word, definition. We spend a lot of our time talking about what's wrong, what needs fixing, and a lot of things do. They have to be fixed. But we don't spend any time, or not nearly enough time, talking about what there is about this city that makes it quite extraordinary. One of the reasons I came here in the first place is it is an extraordinary place. It has gifts, wonderful attractions, magnificent historical heritage, and we don't talk about that. We don't talk about the Inner Harbor anymore, which we should. We don't talk about the Star-Spangled Banner anymore and Fort McHenry and the National Aquarium and the things that can attract people to the city of Baltimore. I am a cheerleader. This town needs a cheerleader, somebody to go out and tell people, this is what's good about Baltimore, come here, and we'll prove it to you. At the same time, as we deal with the issues that must be discussed and the problems that have to be solved, and there are plenty of them. Also, there's the idea of government itself. Constitutional conservative, which is the way I describe myself. The government doesn't do everything, and it shouldn't. The government should provide an atmosphere and an environment in which things happen. Encourage them to happen, but don't get too involved in them so that people cannot function easily within that environment.
Well, tell us what then the parameters of that involvement should be. Let's take, as a case in point, Port Covington. Luke Broadwater reporting in the Baltimore Sun this morning that it looks like there's enough people on the city council who have signed a petition that will force this vote out of committee to a full vote by the council, and it would putatively head to Mayor Rawlings Blake's desk pretty soon. What's your feeling about that deal as you know it, as you understand it at this point, and is that a legitimate and good use of whatever leverage government might have when it comes to something like this?
The TIF is a crapshoot. The payoff comes down the road. The thing about Port Covington is like the thing about the Inner Harbor. You can compare the development of the two. Port Covington is on the water. We love to develop on the water. We don't love to develop away from the water that much, but on the water. The land was available. Kevin Plank has a proven record of being successful in what he does. This is a $500 million project. He's put a lot of his own money into it. He's going to put in more. People like Kevin Plank.
Well, the total project's about $5.5 billion. Yeah. But the initial, city's TIF part is about $660 million.
Yeah, a little more than
the largest one of those that has ever come down.
Absolutely. But there's no reason to believe that it won't be successful. There's no reason to believe that it won't be good for Baltimore. Now, there have been negotiations along the way about jobs, about low-cost housing. Adjustments have been made. But we can't nitpick this deal to death to the point where even someone like Kevin, I don't know the man personally, so forgive me, Mr. Plank, for calling you Kevin. He has made a commitment to invest in the city of Baltimore. He's our number one entrepreneur right now. Let him do what he does best, because down the road it will augur well for the development of new industry, new housing, and a new look for Baltimore City. I am in favor of the TIF.
But is it unreasonable for the city to say, okay, Mr. Plank, you want to develop what amounts to a city within a city? We will build all of these roads. We will put in these stop signs. We will put in the sidewalks. We will put in the gas and sewer lines and that sort of thing. We will do all of the infrastructure that you need so that you can build your headquarters, so that you can develop retail establishments, you can build housing. And in return, we'd like you to make sure that, number one, the people you hire to some degree are going to live in the city of Baltimore, and then, number two, it will not be the housing that will be available will not just be for people of means. It will be for people who are economically disadvantaged, who are not making a whole lot of money. Is it unreasonable for the government to say, since we're going to take the risk by creating all this infrastructure, we need to get something in return?
No, it's not unreasonable, but it's not the government, it's the people. The government is the people. That's the nice thing about the United States, to ask that question. Yes, there should be jobs, and a substantial number of them, for Baltimoreans. The problem is, can you find the people in the city to do the jobs that need to be done? There was a recent survey, I think it was last week, by the Department of Labor, that showed that there are 200,000 empty construction jobs in the United States because we can't find the skilled workers to fill them. You need people who can do more than just pick up a shovel and dig some dirt. You need the carpenters, electricians, the specialists.
But, of course, part of this deal includes a $25 million job training center, which will do just that.
Job training center is a great idea, too. But we should have young people coming out of our school system, the Baltimore City school system, who already have the skills. That's why I've made public education number one, my number one priority in this campaign. We have a terrible public school system in the city of Baltimore. $1.2 billion budget. Where does the money go? And why are we ranked lowest among the major urban school districts in the United States? We don't teach our young people the right things. We don't teach them how to work.
How does the mayor of Baltimore influence what happens in the school system? What can you do as the mayor to change what's going on in the instructional life of those teachers and students.
Unfortunately, the mayor cannot simply stand up and say, okay, the school system is now going to be changed. I have to work with the state to do that. We have ceded a lot of the authority in the city to the state over the years, probably a mistake. But the pure and simple fact is, if you can convince the state, the legislature, the legislators, that something has to be done, that half of our schools should be vocational technical schools, that young people should come out of high school with the skills to immediately enter the workforce, whether or not they want to go to college, that's their choice. It can be done. You have to have somebody at the helm in the mayor's office who is willing to fight this fight and fight it to win it.
So you want to wrest control of the school system back from the state to the city?
Absolutely.
And what does that accomplish exactly? Because that costs money.
It will. There's no doubt that it will cost money, but I think it's defeatist to assume that if we take control, we meaning the city of Baltimore, of our schools again, that the state will simply wash its hands of the whole thing. We can still get aid from the state. I'm sure that Larry Hogan understands that we have to improve public education in the city of Baltimore. But if we have control of our own schools, we can change the matrix and turn out high school graduates who are more capable of contributing not only to their own lives, but to the health of the city as a whole.
On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. My guest this morning, Alan Walden. He is the Republican nominee for mayor of Baltimore City. Let's talk about the city and the problems of racial and economic inequality that were laid bare in April of 2015 when we had this terrible violence and uprising. And since then, people have been thinking about ways to attenuate what they call the two Baltimores, the Baltimoreans who are well off and those who are not so well off. Do you accept that characterization of two Baltimores?
I reject it entirely. I reject it because I think that we all have, all of the people who live in Baltimore, the same basic goals and objectives, the success of the city and the success of the people who live in it. Now, you talked about the riots that took place more than a year ago, back in April of 2015. Triggered by the Freddie Gray case. Everything started to unravel with that. The police department has now been marginalized to a great degree by the Justice Department report, by the consent decree to which people have agreed. Wait a minute.
They've not quite agreed to the consent decree yet, but they're working at it.
Okay. They're working on it. They will eventually agree on something. Some framework for revising plans and objectives and training and what have you. But to marginalize the police, which is what we've done, has created a strange, call it backlash, within certain parts of the community. What is it? On the Labor Day weekend, we had 22 shootings, 3 deaths, just over that one weekend. When you take the police and say, these people are bad, you actually empower the outlaw element because it says, well, nobody's going to pay attention to the cops anymore. We can do pretty much what we want. We have to bring together the good-hearted, good-spirited people on both sides. And I hate calling them both sides because we should all be together in the law enforcement community and the general population and say, look, we all have the same goal and objective. We need a better city. We can build it together if we stop being angry at one another all the time, if we stop looking for reasons to be offended, if we trust one another. How can 22 people be shot over a weekend and no one see anything?
How does trust, though, when we talk about trusting each other, there are people in the African-American community who have very limited, if no trust at all, in the police department because, as the Department of Justice report outlined, there have been you know, many, many documented cases of police misconduct and abuse of their authority. How do you regain the trust of the African-American community in the police department and in the criminal justice system, given the long history of what most folks described as, you know, as systemic racism and intolerance?
You're not going to create the proper environment overnight. You have to work on it. Nobody works on it better than the cop on the beat. You put the cops on the beat, and you do with them what we used to do with them years ago. They learn who lives in the neighborhood. They talk to the young people on the streets. They know the owners of the businesses. They create, through their demeanor and their presence on the beat, the sense of trust. They rebuild the sense of trust so that people, regardless of race, creed, color, or national origin, know or suspect or believe that if something goes wrong, if something looks wrong, I can go to this person, and this person will do something to help me. It can be done. It takes work. People have to believe, and they have to be more reasonable in their approach.
Well, forgive me if I'm not getting this right, but okay. What you're saying doesn't, I think, makes a lot of sense to a lot of people, and it doesn't sound to me to be completely different, or as a matter of fact, different at all from what I've heard Senator Pugh say, or for that matter, all 13 folks who were running for the Democratic nomination back in April, and I talked to every one of them.
I don't think there's
no problem getting consensus about, you know, some of the things that the police should do, but is there a particular, because when you talk about, you know, the Democrats have been in control since the 1960s in the mayor's office. I mean, is there any radical departure you can point to in terms of policy that that people can identify?
Well, the one thing I'd like to do is I'd like very much to have a law enforcement summit in the city of Baltimore, because there are cities around the country with similar problems. Detroit is one, St. Louis is another one, New Orleans is another one, but also the cities where things have worked. What has worked? Safe streets sometimes works. The broken window policy works and then doesn't work. We've already decided pretty much that...
This broken window seems to be very much at odds with what you're talking about, community policing with the cops.
That's why I said sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. I don't think that zero tolerance works very well at all. We have to address the drug problem. We have to address the issue of gangs. Most of the activity that takes place about drug-related crime has to do with gangs. There are other shootings at random as well. I'm not saying that all of us or that many other candidates are thinking the same way that I am, but you have to be direct and quick and move on this swiftly instead of picking around the edges. And we've done a lot of picking around the edges.
We got 10 seconds left. You know what that means because you're an old radio hand. Are you going to vote for Donald Trump, sir?
Tough question. There are a lot of questions that are being asked about Donald Trump. We got Hillary's health, and we've got Donald Trump, whom I regard as a combination of P.T. Barnum and Theodore Roosevelt. How's that?
Not quite sure what to make of that. Well, it's good to see you, and good luck with the rest of the campaign, and I'm delighted to see that you're feeling well and looking terrific.
Thanks very much, Tom.
Alan Walden is the Republican nominee for mayor of Baltimore City. He'll go head-to-head on the ballot in November with Democrat Senator Catherine Pugh, Green Party nominee Joshua Harris. Programming note, Joshua Harris will join me here on Maryland Morning coming up on Friday. Coming up after a break for the news, theater critic J. Wynn Russick. She'll have a review of Come From Away at the Ford's Theater in Washington. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.